All right. And then
this meeting is being recorded.
Yes, it absolutely is. and then Peter, if you could please talk about the what was proposed or is proposed as our upcoming in-person Ultimate Healing course this May in Thailand.
We're planning to do 3 weeks. We've got the venue booked, but obviously with possible travel restrictions with COVID shots not again, we might have to kind of stop that. So we're trying to make sure it works and we can get you here without having to be vaxxed. But basically we're doing 3 weeks, a week on the body work, endocrine system, a week on the spine, and a week on the cranium, because that part can't be done online. So you'll be guided through 3 weeks of full point holding to get all your different layers cleared so you come out totally healed and enlightened.
But I think the important point to bring up right now is if there are any concerns, because in the news very recently today and yesterday, it has been said that in order to come into Thailand, you must be double jabs. You must have 2 vaccinations. And in order to leave Thailand, you need to have 2 vaccinations. So we really wanted to just bring that to your attention, that we are aware of this and that we are obviously monitoring the situation. We don't believe that it will last too long. Because I think it's got something to do.
Also, it hasn't actually got into action yet. They're planning it, but it hasn't got into action. So hopefully we can discreate that one.
Yeah, and we think it might be because of Chinese New Year's coming up. And obviously we have a lot of influx of travellers over the Chinese New Year because they celebrate it highly here. So we're thinking it might just be related to that. So if anyone has any concerns, you can put your questions into us. But just to let you know, we are aware and we are watching and monitoring, and more news to come. We plan for it to go ahead, put it that way. Okay, so that's that. We just wanted to just let you know that we are aware. Any questions, put me in the chat. I'm now going to hand over to Peter so that he can actually get going with today's topic, because we are now at 20 past the hour. So I'll shut up. Thank you very much, Peter. Off we go.
Okay, so hello. So hopefully you've read my recent blog on the evolution of metaphysics. What I want to go into a bit more detail about now is about co-creation and how this works and all the different things we're co-creating with, basically all one really, because obviously we come out of this pure awareness, we then separate, which is why now the gods are now outside ourselves. But the thing about these gods, they're really all one. You find certain of the systems like the Hebrew and the Islamic, they have different names of Allah or different names of gods, but they don't see them as separate. Actually, the same is true in the Sanskrit. You see the word Deva, its real meaning, its translation, is actually attribute. You're not really looking at separate gods, you're looking at attributes of the creator. This is what all the different names of God are about. The different aspects, different powers, different things that creator does. In order to explain it more fully, you have to have many, many names, because there are many aspects, many attributes. But that's not really separate. When we look at it, we're not separate either. Yes, we're in a more separated level, because we've come down to this isolated personality, we forget that we're God. But actually, we're all one. That's why it's easy to co-create, because this is you're co-creating with, so why not? All these powers, the things you let outside yourself, are really you. Not the you that you are here now, but the you that is the God. Because we came with this pure awareness, and we form this limited entity. So creation then, when it's whole, is actually co-creation. Rather than just try and create for this little piece of thing that you think you are now, you're co-creating with more of you. The aspects of creator that are out there, that do all the work of creating the universe. So it's unlimited in its power. When you understand that, then it's by co-creating these aspects, these attributes, you have an unlimited power to create what you want. It has to work every time. We fall into these patterns of not being powerful enough, thinking we can't do it. But actually, whether you think you're powerful or not, your life is still your creation. It can actually be quite a limiting need to actually seek more power all the time. If I had more power, then I could do it. No, it's not true. You're creating a reality right now. It's not the power that needs increasing. If you've got more power and you're creating problems, you correct those problems more efficiently. It's about taking control of the thought patterns, learning how to discreate the past so you stop creating problems, and having more energy to create what you want. In a way, power itself is an illusion. We measure power when we're in this state of separation. But actually, when you consider it's all illusion, creators as a dream, and there it is. You know, it doesn't take any more power to create a planet than to say it is to say pick up a pin, because it's all illusion. Therefore, we don't need more power. It's all your dream. You don't have to redream it. So this need for power is also part of the illusion. Fact is, because we're one with all the creator, and this is our dream, by reconnecting those aspects of ourself that we left out there, which we should create in the universe. It's easy to recreate our dream. Dream what we want, and there it is, it happens. This whole concept of co-creation then is realizing that, yes, you are one with the creator because you came out of the same one consciousness. All these different names have got all the different gods of different systems, all part of the same oneness. They're not really separate. So there shouldn't really be any conflict between religions. If you're looking at an attribute which describes the power you need to actually create a certain thing, for instance, you want to create wealth, it doesn't matter whether you say use it as Lakshmi or whether you use it as, say, one of the Hebrew names or the Islamic names, like which is the classic one, the Al-Khoria, or whether you use something like the Egyptian one, Menentet. It's still that aspect of creator, which is the wealth-creating one. You don't even have to have an individual name for the gods, for different systems either, it's just language. For instance, those who've done my advanced Jinn course realize when we use the Exoth for the Art spell, we can actually use creative anything. You can actually say anything, wealth creator, love creator, whatever it is, because it's still the same power. There's only one little spell on that one which we use, which is a certain name, which actually meets in essence and out of flesh, which actually helps with the connection. But you see, co-creation is quite natural when we actually learn to accept our whole. But that's all that power in the universe, all these gods, everything, that is us too. But we want it back. We don't want to stay this limited little being co-creating. Actually, we're creating with a full power, which is why we have co-creation. So when you're co-creating, something right here. So when you're co-creating, basically, it is still you. So in a way, co-creation is simply an expansion of creation when you understand more of yourself. It's not really separate. To be a co-creator, you must also be a creator. Obviously, you know, if that's something that's creating with you, it doesn't want to use as a partner. So as yourself, you have to be a creator as well, but you realize that you're creating more of yourself because you're whole, you're bigger than this. That's when the power of co-creation comes in, when the power is fully there. Same is true of discreation. Those who've learned to do the journey to creator, say from the Ultimate Healing Course, you know, you go to creator and ask them to discreate it, because then it's like, it's not just you, this piece, it's like the creator's bigger mind can discreate it more easily. You watch it, see all the layers that it dissolve. So because you're shifting a point of identification. When you're identified with the illusion here, it seems hard work because you don't think of yourself as a creator. And most of the concepts of being human don't include all that power. That's a problem. When you actually shift your mind to creator and create and discreate from there, it's easy as this creator is to create. Anything you don't want, you discreate it. You watch all the emotions go. The whole thing vanishes. The situation vanishes in life. So both creation and discreation come easy when you're accepting that co-creation. And we have various tools for shifting awareness into that. As I mentioned on the Ultimate Healing Course, you have the journey to creator. You go up through those layers to be that pure awareness again and do it from there. Otherwise, many of the magic courses use various beings which co-creators, which are aspects of that creator. One of the most powerful ones is the Shining Ones, which we use in the Shining One course, of course. Shining Ones are their first archetypes before they even conceptualized what the creator divides into to its different aspects, before we've given any separate names to different systems. So that's almost beyond different religions, is understanding the basic archetypal energies behind everything. Co-creating those can be very powerful because you're picking the particular archetype you need to get the effect you want. When you're looking at just creator as a whole, it's pretty random and vast because there's so many possibilities. You want the aspect which does the thing you want to do now. That's why the Shining One work becomes so powerful. So you see how this evolves, so basic understanding that we are creator, we're pure awareness, and that pure awareness simply creates experiences and discreates. Different tools are different aspects of who we are, which we've forgotten. And we have different ways of activating that power, journey to creator, co-creation with the Shining Ones, and many of the beings you work with, say the Jinn or the fairies that we work with in different courses, dark elves, dragons. These are all aspects of the power, which is out there as one part of that vast creator, which are then also your co-creators. Working with any of these things gives you far greater power in doing your creation and discreation. But we have to start with that basic process, knowing how to create and how to discreate, and also how the two work together. Because you're not discreating, your life's getting so blocked with these past creations, you just can't create anything anymore because all these negative beliefs are in the way, which are really simply manifestations of past creations. Your beliefs or program for the past, the little creations you haven't finished with, all these stuck feelings which hold you in place, these are all just past creations. had finished his creating, so you can actually create anew. Understanding how those two things work together, and then understanding how everything else can co-create with you, is what gives you mastery. Always starts from that basic principle. Understand creation and discreation, and realize in between that we're experiencing. Thing is, we're not just a bit that's experiencing, we're the creator and discreator as well. It's by only being the experience that we get, end up being victim. We've left power outside ourselves and think somebody else is doing it to us. So they're realizing, no, this is our creation. We create it, we experience it, we discreate it. When you're not remembering that you created it, you're no longer in that position of discreating it either. Because obviously when you go to the process of discreation, you get to the point of recognizing that this is not you, it's your creation. That's when it vanishes. So it's all about going to that simple understanding that you are creator. You've gone through many layers of around that and built our personality around it, which is limited, but you can still go to that pure awareness in meditation. And this is what meditation is all about. Going beyond all these identities and go back to that pure awareness. That's where it should be going. Whichever method you use, whatever path you use to get there, it's about going back to pure awareness. And in that pure awareness, you're a creator and discreator. So any questions so far?
Yes, Lynn Marie is asking you to repeat the Egyptian wealth one. I'm not sure the Egyptian wealth one.
Renentet. It's the snake aspect of Isis. It's this wealth-giving serpent.
What is the importance of vampiric beings in creation? How do we co-create with such beings if they are also us, yet fed or want to feed on the lower levels of our being?
Well, we don't want to be a parasite, even though that is also an aspect of our being, which we can actually evolve, because, you know, we've all been there to some degree in the past. We know we've all evolved up to this level through various layers. But basically, the vampiric energy comes when you want to take something from somebody else. Why would you want to do that? Because somebody's abusing power. There are tools within the magic. This is actually part of one of the tools within the Makutu Nogasosro in the Dragon Course. You learn to take somebody else's power away. If you've got a black magician attacking you, take the power away. That's vampirism, isn't it? You're taking power away. But the thing is, recognize that modern science is all about shifting energy from one place to another. You don't have to be some kind of undead to do it. The problem here is looking at the definitions people add to these things because they identify with one function. Just because you're able to take power from somebody else doesn't make you this horrible vampiric creature, because you're not doing it all the time. It's about being in control, not having to do it, not identifying with it. But that power is still useful. If you're stuck in that role and you identify with it, then that's what you're doing all your life. You can't do anything else. So you don't want to be a vampire as such, but the vampiric energy is an aspect you can call in to use at times when it's appropriate. It doesn't mean you were a vampire. You'd have to go through some kind of death apotheosis to become undead. All these things are just a built-in illusion. Also, it's interesting when you look that the word vampire didn't exist before Bram Stoker wrote the book Dracula. It didn't exist before that. People talk about all these ancient vampire traditions, but the word didn't exist. You can look for it, it's not there. It's all modern writings. And this first idea of taking this Count Dracula, who is actually based on Vlad Tepes, interesting that name Dracula came from, it meant son of the dragon. His father was Dracul, which was dragon, meant a powerful being. So these are words people use to describe powerful beings. The warlords there used magic and conquered everything with the dragons, according in their language. Therefore, Vlad Tepes, as Dracula, was son of the dragon. Didn't mean he actually went sucking blood. That was a story built around him. This is how people kept creating these superstitions. They began to make this thing into some kind of bloodthirsty predator. There'd been many stories of dead creatures before who come back and haunt and cause problems, but they were never seen as predatory in this way. This is all a modern idea based on a story. The ability to take power from somebody else doesn't make you an undead. So let's get rid of that illusion. But yes, there are beings who are good at taking power and don't do much else. Look at the old ones, for instance. They're so primitive, all they do is to devour. And that is the earliest start about a stage of evolution. You can see the reflected in when you're developing a fetus. The first thing that forms before anything else is a digestive system, because you've got to eat to survive. Before brain or anything else, you're going to survive. So the earliest survival instinct is to devour. There's no conscience yet, no intelligence, just devouring. This is what this primitive conscience is about. That's there in us, but not alone. Yes, you're going to be able to consume and devour and take, but with intelligence. That's the difference. You're not denying it. We actually bring it back into a whole. Now, there are times when using that different, the particular aspect of consciousness because it's useful then. But I said, use it, but don't identify with it. Use a vampire entity when you want to steal power from somebody, but you don't have to be that. Yeah, we're balancing with everything to become whole.
The next question is around discreation. Does the process of discreation need to be observed, or can it just be burned or dissolved? And how would working with Carly help with discreation?
The thing is, whatever you work with, you just need to understand the process. You're not really burning or dissolving something. You're allowing it to discreate itself because you've finished with it. You're not fighting it. You've finished with it. Remember, when you're still in emotion, you're still creating it. All those thoughts and emotions that are creating the situation, if they're still alive, you're still creating it. All you have to do is stop creating it and it's gone. So you're creating every second. It's only there because you're still creating it. When you stop creating, it vanishes. So you're not fighting against it because you're fighting against your own creation. You simply stop creating it by actually finishing with it, basically going through the emotions when it's no longer there, no longer feeling it, then it just vanishes. What you do is observe it, watch it fade away. You're not doing anything at that point. You allow it to discreate itself. You only have to observe it. Same is true, whatever magic you do to get rid of it, you have a position where you're observing. And it's not just in the discreation, in every magic must be a point of just observing. When you go to create events, remember we make the command and you observe. There has to be a surrender at that point. The power of any magic consists of two things, a really strong, clear intent and surrender. Once you've set the intention, you must then surrender to let it happen. You've got to get yourself out of the way, or you're blocking the process. At that point, it's not you doing it anymore. You already set the intention. You must now observe. Remember, nothing is there until it's observed. Observation is an important part of the process. So you don't do it, you observe it. You start by setting intention, that's all you need to do. The rest you're observing.
Thank you. Next question. I have a bit of a conundrum. I'd like to get back to a position to complete and experience a past situation. The memories of the first unfinished state are still strong. On one hand, this draws me back to the current I didn't fully experience, perhaps to regain it. But on the other hand, would it be better to discreate the remaining pull and memory and then start completely afresh?
This question does involve experience. That's a thing. The process involves going into the emotion. If you're still alive in the emotion, still alive, great, welcome it. That's the first step. Don't try and get rid of the feeling. Remember, it goes in its own time when you actually start welcoming it. When you stop resisting and simply say, recognize, you know, this isn't me, it's my creation, you can just allow that feeling. It's not you, you're not identified with it. Take the position of observer and just welcome that feeling. And as the more you welcome it, okay, you feel it fully, great, that's what you're meant to do. Feel, 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 and you'll get to take through different layers. You feel more memories as all the layers come as you keep welcoming. When you start putting welcoming, more feelings come. Until you get to the end, then it discreates. Don't try and discreate it before you've got to through all the feelings. The feeling is part of the process, remember. So you're not trying to get rid of it as such. Yes, that's your intention, but you have to go through the feelings first. You welcome them. Go through that pain and anger and frustration, disappointment, whatever there is, all these layers, all the hopeless, everything that's there, you keep welcoming every feeling. And the more you welcome it, the more you remember, you get to the bigger picture, you see more of the stuff you shut out before. You start to feel all the stuff you shut down before as well. You feel more. But then you get to a point where you've gone through all of it. The emotions run out. You then see a whole thing, and you're dissociated, you're almost seeing the picture on the outside. You recognize then, okay, I can see the whole picture now. This is not me, this is my creation. That's when you can discreate it, or rather allow it to discreate. It discreates because you have no more feeling invested in it. You haven't got rid of the feelings, you felt them. Feelings went out when you felt them, don't you want to be felt? They will pass when you feel them, that's the thing. They stay for a long time when people are fighting them. As soon as you welcome them, they start to pass much more quicker. So that's the thing, don't fight the emotions, welcome them. And that's the start of the process of discreation. It involves welcoming until you've gone all those layers until there's no more emotion invested in it. You finished with the creation, so it fades away.
How do we co-create with beings that have as their job to age our body and eventually kill it when we wish for immortality? Isn't the desire for immortality unnatural in a way? So aren't we going against those beings?
No, we have choice. There's so much programming that we have to age and everything, but all of this is programming. And actually, that people set standards from different ages and different times, and people then follow this program, what they expect. Now, there's some people don't age that much. Or some people seem to age physically on the outside, but actually still living fully in their life because they're not thinking about it. Interesting, it was like, there was the same from Clint Eastwood, because he was 85 when he started producing his latest film, and somebody said, well, how do you keep going? And he says, well, I get up each morning, I don't let the old man in. It means he's just not thinking about being old, you just get on with it. And he asked you, how would you be if you didn't remember your birthday, if you forgot how many years older you were? A lot of these things we held in place by thinking about it. You have no idea how much you could be if you let go of those thoughts. Now, we don't necessarily want to live forever simply because we are without other realities to experience. It's not the same as having to die. There's a point where we realize we're not ready to move on. We're not afraid to die. Fear of death won't get you there. When you actually say work with something like the Mahamudra mantra, which is the great death conquering mantra, first thing you get to is your fear of death. There must be no fear of death in order to not be in that pattern. But also, there are different currents, in a way, which you choose between different sets. Remember when you did maths at school, there was a set theory, if one set or the other, they sometimes overlap, sometimes different sets, you can be in one or the other, you can't be in both. Same is true in our metaphysics, in a way, where you have this concept of entropy. Now, entropy is a scientific principle, which is based on lack of consciousness. Things left to themselves decay. Things go towards disorder. When you look at consciousness, it's the opposite. Consciousness organizes. You take any group of conscious beings together, and sooner or later they're going to organize something. So the physical laws of matter say everything's going to decay. Consciousness is always organizing, trying to evolve, going to a higher level. So the evolution and organization is a separate current from the devolution, which is the entropy, which leads to the aging and death. So what happens if you step out of one current into the other? Through meditation, through say the Mahamudra mantra, let go of the concept of entropy, all this physical conditioning that everything's going to decay and die. It keeps a concentrated attention because it affects your life in many ways. How often do you think you have to keep struggling, otherwise everything's going to fall apart? What if it didn't? What if you did nothing, everything would keep growing and improving? That's again this current we put ourselves into, we align ourselves to the energy of Shiva and much environment matter, because consciousness is raising all the time, automatically natural. We move into reality where that is natural. Decay isn't natural, improvement is. Doesn't mean you could live forever because at some point you say, I finished with this body, I'm moving on somewhere else. But you're evolving. The actual immortality comes with evolution, expanding your consciousness. You have to choose when you're ready to move on, or at least being a something to do with the choice of it. You know, maybe not saying I'm going to move on now, but it's more a case where no more fear of death, I've moved through this one, finished this world, it's okay, I'm ready to go now. That's a certain age when you might live longer than normal, might be 120 or whatever, not necessarily 1,000 or like move through with the Mahusla, but it's like you can live much longer than you think because you get fullness out of life. You're not allowing energy to pull you down all the time. Life can be wonderful all the time because you're actually raising up in your energy all the time. You're being carried by it, lifted by it, rather than ground down by it. The current of Shiva is like, yeah, that's law of spirit. This whole idea of entropy is simply a law of matter. There isn't really a spirit behind that. It's a law of matter. It's lack of spirit. Sometimes you give it a name, like sometimes people see Satan as a law of matter, but restriction, entropy, death. Actually, that's not Satan really is. Satan means the opposer. People often mistake it and think, no, this is what matter really is. But no, matter isn't here to restrict us. It's simply a level of experience. Our spirit doesn't be restricted by it. Our bodies live within certain rules to a degree. But as you realize, as you learn more to spiritual laws, the physical laws become less real, less of a hold on you. They're less fixed in your life. You don't have to age so fast. You don't have to get weak and, you know, you don't have to go senile, all those things, you know. You can stay alive, full of energy, clear mind, well into the old age. So it's like the laws of entropy, which people have learned to expect, are based on unnatural living. Just by having a better diet and better meditation practice and living more in harmony with nature, you can live much longer and be much fresher mind anyway. People's expectation of aging and dying have been fixed by society. And these things you have to question. Why do you believe it? I only believe it because it's the consensus is accepted this. But this is where you want to step out of the herd instinct. Think for yourself. You don't have to do what everybody else is doing. That includes aging. Just because everybody else ages a certain way doesn't mean you have to.
So is the process of discreation still the same if the emotions are experienced as well as observed, or is there a distinct separation needed for it to complete?
Well, observing is also an experience. It's more a case you're not identified with it. So what happens when you are resisting something, you're trying to hold on to it and you forget where the separation is. Remember the simple exercise we did in the course when you're holding some object in your hand? Could be like a little thing, you hold it and squeeze it tight. As you squeeze it tight and hold onto it, after a while you can't tell where your hand ends and the object begins, boundaries are lost. This is what we do with our feelings. You become so identified with them, you can't separate. This is why people say things like, I'm an angry person, rather than saying, I'm feeling angry. No, it's not who you are, you're feeling it. First you have to do is let go of that grip and let it just be there in your hand where you can feel it. Same with feelings, when you stop fighting and stop resisting and just allow it to be there, you're no longer identified with it so much. You're saying, okay, now I'm here, here's a feeling, it's not me. Because it's not you, you're not identified with that, so when it's easy to feel, that's the observation. You're still feeling it, but from position of observer, rather than being the victim of it. Well, relationship to the universe has changed into one of creator to creation, rather than one of creature to creation. You're realizing it's all your creation. The emotion isn't you, it's something you're experiencing. And it's okay to experience it, it's just an emotion. It's okay if I'm feeling angry, it's okay if I'm feeling grief. These are your emotions. I just observe it, let it be there. Not make such a big thing about it, not judge it, not think it's terrible, it's just an emotion. That's the attitude when you're welcoming it. You know, yes, you are feeling it, but not with attachment, not with identification.
So how do we discreate with entropy, with the slow death of something?
Again, you observe this one and realize there's a choice. Entropy is the law of matter. You've been in it and you recognize all the kind of rules around it, all the condition you accepted, all that when it comes with materialism. So much of our life we've brought up forgetting that we're spiritual beings. And then even when you start waking up to being a spiritual being, you think those laws are still real. When you observe this, you recognize the conditioning, you recognize all that you've learned, all the kind of stuckness of humanity around you that's holding this position. You can observe it and let it go. Of course, it's like replacing something that's useful. This is why of things like the Mahamrityunjaya mantra. When I use that mantra, that's actually shifting me from one set to the other, out of set of entropy to set of evolution. That makes it much easier to observe that entropy is something that's not real. When that's all there is, you can't see anything else. You need something, you need an alternative. It's where the meditation is important. And so meditation have different goals. When I'm meditating with the Mahamrityunjaya mantra, that's when I'm working on that current of evolution. It takes you out of the entropy towards immortality. So the mantra has been really useful. That allows you to preserve all this stuff about entropy and the laws of matter and realize, no, that's not real. This is just one alternative, one choice. So I don't have to be there. I'll stay in this one instead. So I need to watch that and gradually be less and less attached to it. So I'm going more into the current of evolution, becoming closer to Shiva.
And if anyone has had a look at the recent newsletters, the next month's magical membership topic is Secrets of Extended Youth. So if this is interesting you, then also that workshop might interest you as well. Okay. Due to the timing, I would like to go over to the pre-submitted questions. So make sure that those get asked for you, Peter. So we have a couple come in. So let me go to the first one. The Intelligence Shield Ultra Talisman is only effective for me for 1 week exactly. This has been true for approximately 6 months now. If I redouse the frequency every 7 days, it's very effective. But starting
That's true.
On day eight, my physical, mental and emotional state starts to deteriorate. I have lots of other protections in place and maintained, but they seem to have no effect on whatever this is. The situation is viable, but a bit concerning. Why might this be?
Because the attacks change. If someone's attacking you and they're not getting through, they'll change the frequency. They find different ways around. This way you've got to be proactive. So yeah, about a week is about how I do it as well. Read out every week for the frequencies, reset it, because the frequencies coming have changed. Even the intelligent shield, it should be measuring the frequency itself, but people find different ways around things. And although the thing about the Intelligent Shield Ultra, it can actually do with up to 200 curses at once, but you only have to douse one frequency for your overall protection. But that might change, because resonance is changing. As you're changing and different things come into your life, different attacks coming in, the overall resonance is different. It changes, which is why you have to douse a new rate now and then. It's normal. Luckily, it's not hard to douse one rate once a week.
Can anyone use the Fairy Truth Spell? Is it only for those who have done the Fairy Magic course?
I can give you initiation if you haven't done the course. I've done that at times. But yes, it's only use of Fairy Magic, therefore you have to be in tune with Fairy Magic.
I think there's a Q&A where you give the attunement, isn't there?
I think there was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can give to anybody who wants it.
Mm-hmm. So if anyone wants to go back through the, not backlog, back history, you know, the list of Q&As that are recorded in the online platform, then there should be a Q&A, past Q&A with that there as well. Okay, let's go back over to the pre-submitted questions. You sometimes say you wake up through love or pain. Does this mean that all obstacles or suffering are not necessary in life and that everyone can be awakened by loving principle? And if so, how do you help create that?
Exactly. And it's like you have to be open to love to not need pain anymore. See, it's not just love. So there's four hallows places we wake up: love, beauty, enchantment, or solitude. But each of those has a downside if you're not taking it, because there are things which do similar things. Both love and pain bring you close. They bond you. You're painful. You have relationships based on pain, where people keep hurting each other because they're bonded to that pain. They're bonded to their misery. This is why you get, say, abusing of children and stuff like that, because people bonding through pain. So just by allowing the love in, you don't have to have the pain anymore. But you see, love is scary. You find people would rather have painful relationships because they're used to pain. Love makes you vulnerable. And I wonder, once you become associated with them, once you become used to having pain around, you don't want to be vulnerable anymore, because vulnerable usually means someone's going to hurt you. No, that's isn't necessarily what it has to mean. What you're vulnerable is what you're there to change you. To be vulnerable to love is to change because you're loved. Doesn't mean the person's trying to force you to change. That's not love. Love is not saying stay as you are. It's not saying you have to change. It's saying I love you as you are, but through my love I make you more. When you're loved, you grow. But you're not in control of what you're becoming. But you can trust that you're becoming something more. This is where how evolution is. You don't know what you're becoming, but you're becoming something more. So people are scared of love because they're vulnerable. The real key here is to actually see vulnerability as something positive, not a negative. It's part of your power, because you're allowing things to change you. How can you change your reality if you're not letting it change you? It's all a measure of you. You have to become vulnerable to the goddess, vulnerable to your own power, vulnerable to the success you're creating. Be different because you're now a successful person, or you're becoming a successful person, you're becoming different all the time. So if you have to be vulnerable to let yourself be changed. This is how resonance works. You know, a new wave comes in, it changes you. You become different, but you're becoming the kind of person who can have the success you want. So really, it's all about facing your vulnerability, looking at the fears around love, looking at why you shut it out, and then choosing it. Also, case of recognizing when you feel pain, you could have love instead. There is choice. So you first make that choice, and then you look at your fears around love. Look at why you're shutting it out. Why you're afraid of it. What are your beliefs around it?
Next question is, can you explain the difference between what the APEP and the Discreation Talisman does? When to use one and when is it better to use the other? Can you give an example? I now use them both at the same time on the same issue.
You can, but they work differently. So your APEP is about neutralizing energy. Whatever energy you put on it on is now a void. That's best used for energies. Like if there's an attack or the egregore, whatever it is, it neutralizes. No more power in that. This creation, it takes you through the whole process. It facilitates the whole process we spoke about. It doesn't just suddenly vanish. It makes you become aware of the emotions. You can go through them and it'll start happening naturally. That in your life, you go through these emotions and when they run out, the thing goes. The discreation process is to facilitate the whole process of discreation. You can set it onto a certain thing, but by dousing its frequency, it actually discreate that thing. But it'll work through your emotions. PEP's different. It's simply void. So you don't feel anything. but that energy is now neutralized. It's not the same as permanent discreation. It'll stop something going forward, it'll stop having any power. You won't actually make the situation discreate out of your life. So I'll use a pep when there's a negative energy, or I can use it for negative energy in my life. I can use it on negative people so they have no impact on me. It'll neutralize them so they don't affect me. Sometimes it's easier than going to the whole person of discreation. See, with discreation, what I'll do, I'll want to actually look at the whole pattern and discreate the whole thing. Like, for instance, not be one person bothering me now, I might look at how it reflects other people bothered me before. I see an ongoing pattern. When I discreate, I'll go through all the feelings around this, so all those situations dealt with, and it never happens again. The pep will simply neutralize this one person so they have no impact in my life. So discreation is more thorough in tech, but it takes more time.
Which talismans can you use to attack and destroy negative egregores on the psionic plate?
Well, I've made it up recently. I put up an egregore control plate, which can both command an egregore and drain it with energy totally, put it into something else. So that's the easiest way. Otherwise, talismans, well, you can use a pep because it'll neutralize the energy of the egregore. I'd use that one. Those who've done the dark psionics course, we had some Egyptian ones. There was a destroyer one that would work too. But the simple ones to go first is a pep to really neutralize the energy of that egregore. So it's no more power. But if you want to get the egregore control plate, you can actually drain energy of the egregore, put in something of your choosing, like one of your own servitors, even your own business, because that's an egregore too. So you can actually take the energy, put in something you want. And you can also command egregores if you don't want to destroy them, change them.
Does vaccine injury have its own egregore, or is it an egregore itself? And what if you want to influence its recognition and existence? Because now people with the vaccine injury stand alone. They are misunderstood and or ignored. How to influence that?
This is a strange one, because it's like, really, we're all in this together. You see, those who didn't get the vaccine are still being affected by shedding. We realize we've all got the same enemy here in a way. We're all being attacked in the same way. Some people made different choices, but actually the whole world has been victimized to this thing. We're not really separate. We're all dealing with it. We're all kind of one in this, you know, and remember that we do affect each other. This is why there's an egregore. First of all, there is the whole human race is considered an egregore itself. Then there's, you might separate egregores of vaccinated and unvaccinated, different sets again. Also, those who are dying could form an egregore. Anything that's similar forms a group of set and therefore forms an egregore. Now, in dealing with this, you actually want to deal with the egregores that's causing the problem, such as the egregore of medical dominance, where everybody believes in them and still puts up with this bullshit. We take away the power of the egregores of the medical companies themselves. But actually, this egregore, it's like more like a morph field where people believing in them is something which has to be taken down. This is energy people don't even consider. That very belief itself is an egregore. It causes people to keep believing in these medical systems, even though they've failed us so many times in the past. And so they create other problems before. Just remember, thalidomide, Wix, or the other drugs which does such damage. People forget about this and they go to the next one, it's not really tested, get damaged again. Why does it keep happening? This is beyond then just this vaccine. It's this whole kind of ignorance that forms its own egregore. People keep believing in something that they shouldn't believe in. The authorities say do this, and even though it's killed people millions of times in the past, they still believe in it again. Why? See, this is beyond the present vaccine. There's a morphic field of believing in the kind of pharmaceutical industries. That itself is a danger. That's the first thing to break down. Then we can break down the strength of the pharmaceutical industry itself as its dominance. That's an egregore itself. That has to be broken down. And this egregore spreading sickness through bioweapons and everything, it's another egregore. So you see the several egregores interacting here. They all need dealing with.
Okay, we are coming up for the hour, so we do need to stop there. Sorry that was cut a little bit short today due to the technical issues. Just a reminder that we do have our magical membership workshop coming up after this on dealing with death. So please make sure you register, or if you would like to join us and you're not a member, you can. And a reminder that we have our student Q&A tomorrow at 10 a.m. UK time. So we're back to the normal time tomorrow. If your question has not been asked today, then please pop it in the MeWe group, and Peter, I'll make sure that Peter gets in there and answering those. And the other thing I want to say is to, yeah, make sure that you're looking at the newsletters, because lots of interesting stuff coming out online, etc. And we'll keep watching the Ultimate Healing State of Play. Is there anything else that you would like to say, Peter, before we close today's call?
No, I think you covered it all.
Wonderful. So we will see you in 30 minutes, those of you who are joining us next. Otherwise, we'll see the rest of you tomorrow, I hope, or we'll see you in February. So thank you so much. And we're in the MeWe in the meantime. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend, everybody.
Okay,
thank
bye.
You. Bye, everyone.